This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You join me here on RNIB Connect Radio at Tate Britain on London's Mill Bank, and I'm with Tim Batchelor, who is the assistant curator of the Now You See Us Women Artists in Britain 1520 to 1920, which is here at Tate Britain. Hello, Tim, and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, thank you. Lovely to have you here.
Tim, this is very much a sort of, I suppose, a group show in a way when you think about it. I suppose showcasing that sort of 400-year period and showcasing 100 different artists as well, women artists. And I wondered sort of at that beginning, sort of in sort of Britain during Tudor times, what was sort of life like for women artists at that time?
Yeah, so the exhibition really covers a huge range, 400 years. And we start with some miniatures produced at the court of Elizabeth I and a figure called Lavinia Teerling. We were hoping to have some work by Susanna Horenbolt or Hornibolt, but unfortunately they're very rare and they've been overexposed, so we couldn't include those. But these are women that are documented in the documents that survive. We don't know much else about them, but it's likely that they are from families of artists. We know that Susanna Horenbolt or Hornibolt was from a family of limners or miniature painters and was active in Britain at the court of Henry VIII. And Lavinia Teerling, we don't know much about her early life and career, but again, she's documented in the Tudor documents that survive as being active as a painter at the court of Elizabeth, producing portraits of Elizabeth I as New Year's gifts. And again, it's likely that she was probably the daughter of an artist or married to an artist, and that's how she became an artist herself, because the role of women at this period, they weren't really expected to be working as artists at this stage, and so it's the opportunities and the training that are available to them are very limited. So if you're the daughter of an artist, then you are likely to be trained in the household by your father and you continue in the family business, so to speak.
And I think there was a sort of an opinion from the male artists and male people at that time that the only works that sort of women artists could do was sort of, I suppose, watercolours, landscapes and domestic scenes. But there were women artists who were doing that, but also women artists who were pushing the boundaries. Are there any that sort of come to mind who were sort of pushing those boundaries?
Yeah, so the conception of what a woman could or should do is very limited in the early centuries, right up until the 19th century, really, and maybe beyond. And the idea that they should be painting on a large scale or in oil, which is dirty and smelly and requires lots of space, and the idea that they could be painting from life models unaccompanied, this was all completely inappropriate for a woman to be doing. And so it became ever more the case that they were confined into smaller, more domestic modes of painting, such as miniature painting or pastel work or small watercolour painting that could be the landscape view from their windows in their drawing rooms and so on. However, women are doing that and they're doing it very well. They're incredibly talented. They're successful in doing that. And men are doing that as well, but they're also the women that are breaking those boundaries and are doing other things outside of that and are overturning the conceptions or preconceptions and prejudices of what they could and should do. And one artist that comes to mind, particularly in the mid-19th century, is Elizabeth, Lady Butler, who produces a standout work at the Royal Academy when it's exhibited there. It's called The Roll Call. It's a large, wide picture of the British Army after the Battle of Inkerman during the Crimean War in the mid-1850s. A lineup of the Grenadier Guards who are exhausted and wounded, and one of the soldiers is lying on the floor, possibly dead. And this is produced by a young woman in her early to mid-20s and exhibited, and this is really not expected of what a woman should be doing, let alone a young woman of this age. And it caused a sensation at the Royal Academy. People flocked to see it. A police guard had to be put in front of it. It caused a complete stir. It came to the attention of Queen Victoria, who asked for a viewing of the picture. The picture had been commissioned by an industrialist who then ceded the picture to Queen Victoria. No one could say no to her, and the picture entered the Royal Collection and becomes a standout work for the period, and it's on display here as a centrepiece in our Victorian galleries. So there are expectations of what women could and should do, but so many of them are overturning, confounding and defying those expectations in what they're doing.
And it's incredible to sort of, you know, think now that women artists were only sort of exhibiting in public exhibitions in the 18th century, which seems really sort of strange now, but they were exhibiting. And what was the sort of reaction from the male sort of art world and the general public?
Yeah, so one of the main pathways for a success as an artist is to exhibit your work and for them to be seen and known and your name to be known and then the work to be sold as a result. And these public exhibitions start happening in the 1860s with the Society of Arts, and then the key moment is 1768 with the establishment of the Royal Academy, the main national arts institution in London that has an annual exhibition every year, the Summer Exhibition, which is a major society event. And there are two female founder members of the Royal Academy, Angelica Kauffman and Mary Moser, out of 36 other members. So they are there, but they have a limited access and a limited role because they are not allowed to sit on the council. They can't attend the meetings. They can't take part in any of the discussions to do with the running of the Academy. And they're also not allowed to access to the life drawing class. So they can't go into the life drawing classes to study the nude figure and to improve their drawing there. However, they are there, and women are exhibiting at the Royal Academy, often as honorary members, invited members, in quite large numbers from the 1770s through to the 19th century in ever larger numbers. And some of them are listing their addresses so that people could actually know where they are, visit them, and buy work from them.
And I think that it was sort of only in sort of the 19th century that, you know, sort of women were being accepted into art schools. And there's some wonderful examples, I think, here of some of those early work of those women who were the first women to go into art school.
Yes, so training is obviously incredibly important for any artist, and for women artists it had been a place that had been denied to them for so long. And so from the mid-19th century there is a campaign by women coming together to demand access to the life school, to life drawing. And this really gathers pace, and then it's really with the establishment of the Slade School of Art in the 1870s where women are allowed to attend there, and there's fewer barriers. There's a much more progressive idea about what women could do and the spaces they could inhabit. And women dominated the Slade. They had access to life drawing in a way that they couldn't elsewhere. And this then sees a whole generation of women that are coming through who are embarking on professional careers and successful as women artists in a way that wasn't necessarily possible before. And that carries on into the early 19th century with other art schools and other opportunities and more exhibiting societies. So the New English Art Club is a major one that's aligned to the Slade. Women have greater access. There's not complete access and maybe not as many there as there are men, but there are other opportunities as well as the Groves and the Gallery and the Dudley Gallery and so on, where there are other alternative spaces to the Royal Academy, which remains a very much an old boys network, the old boys club, where women can't get access to, but they have other opportunities elsewhere which they grab hold of with both hands, and also to develop in their own society, the Society of Lady Artists becoming the Society of Women Artists, where they gather their own society, where they can put on exhibitions, show their work, become known and develop their careers.
And I think sort of when we come into the early 20th century, women were sort of getting involved in the emergence of modernism and abstraction and stuff and things like that. Are there any artists that were sort of, I suppose, women artists that were trailblazing that style of art?
Yeah, so we're actually sitting in the final room of the exhibition where we're surrounded by artworks from the beginning of the 20th century, from around 1900 to around 1920. And there are some key figures in that early part of the 20th century, Gwen John, Vanessa Bell, who are kind of key figures in the development of early British modernism. I think particularly Vanessa Bell, we have some examples of her more abstracted work on display, a slightly more conventional still life of flowers, and then next to it, the corner of a mantelpiece, which is really reacting to cubism, this very angular cuboid shapes of the corner of a mantelpiece with a still life of flowers and so on. And also there's a relatively unknown figure called Dolores Courtney. We have another still life by her, which is again very, very strikingly modern in its approach of angular geometric forms, blocks of colours. And she was associated with Vanessa Bell with the Omega workshops, which Vanessa Bell founded And this was a really kind of forward-thinking design practice for producing and making artworks and objects for the home. And you have this moment in the early 20th century of modernism, of this radical moment of things breaking down, and women are very much part of this moment and the forefront of it.
And I suppose when you look back at sort of all the work that is on display here in the exhibition, you know, the 100 artists going over that 400-year period, there are obviously lots of women artists who people may not know of, but are there maybe just a couple that people should possibly seek out and come and see?
Yes, I mean, there are over 100 different artists and over 220 different works covering 400 years, and a number of them will be familiar: Angelica Kaufman, Julia Margaret Cameron, Gwen John. But there are so many others who we probably should have heard of but maybe don't know so well. Catherine Reed in the 18th century, we have some wonderful works by her, both in oil and in pastel. Margaret Sarah Carpenter, also from the early Regency period, the successor to Thomas Lawrence. Louise Jopling in the 19th century, we have a wonderful self-portrait by her. And then, a number of different artists. It's quite hard to stop, really, because there's so many. But, there are so many different artists that people might not know and not be familiar with, and they can come and see them, because now you see us. They're all here.
Well, now you see us. Women artists in Britain from 1520 to 1920 continues here at Tate Britain until the 13th of October 2024. And described tours can be booked in advance by either emailing hello@tate.org.uk or by calling 020-787-8888. Tim, thank you so much for joining me here on R&IB Connect Radio and giving me a real insight and overview into the exhibition Now You See Us.
Thank you, Toby. Lovely to speak to you. Thank you.